Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
He's the CEO and co-founder of Hugo, and we've spoken with him before on this show, but I thought it was really fascinating when I came across a consumer editorial piece that he penned talking about some old school values when it comes to money. And I thought it was interesting how Hugo really builds on that value system of saving and making the best use of your money. So who better to talk to about money than David Ferguson himself? How are you, David? Good morning.
Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
I am doing really well. So I liked this piece that you wrote where you talk about learning the value of money from both sides of the family. Did both sides have slightly different takes on money?
Yes. My mother's side was definitely better at spending it. my father was probably better at saving.
But mum's family was a family that built a business, right?
Yeah, actually, both sides of the family did, in very, very different worlds. So one was an Industrial Revolution family that sort of started off life as a blacksmith, banging out metal and stuff like that, and then ended up as an engineer. And then the other side came out to Singapore 120 odd years ago to build a business here.
Absolutely fascinating. Before we go into the Hugo story, let's go into the David Ferguson and Singapore story. So your family's history stretches back to far back into Singapore's history, right? Your grandfather, Sir Ewan Ferguson?
Yes. He was one of the Sir Ewan Fergusons. We've had two of them. But yeah, he was the first one. And he ran the Straits Trading Company for a long time. And then after the war, was involved in some of the reconstruction efforts and part of government here in Singapore.
So fascinating. So you write in this piece how, you know, you'd sit around the table and talk about money, and, you know, you also very candidly note that we rarely do that anymore. Sit around the table, that is, and speak over a meal. You know, I'm sure some families still make that a priority. But for you, how did that inform your personal philosophy on money?
Well, a lot of people find it scary to talk about money, or awkward, or, you know, they're just uncomfortable doing it. In the same way as sort of people are, you know, in, I guess 30 or 40 years, were uncomfortable talking about their feelings. But, you know, as we move on, things change and people's behaviors adapt. But the thing for me in terms of money is that it was always forced on us, the discussion. My father made us discuss the value of money constantly. And, you know, I mean, we couldn't go off and buy sort of a 10-cent candy without considering the cost of it. I mean, it was just sort of hard training, but useful training, you know.
Fascinating. One of the best pieces of advice I got was also from an accountant. And for the listener, your dad was an accountant,
yes,
right, David?
Yes.
So one of the best pieces of advice I got from my friend's dad, who was an accountant, was he made us buy a little journal and note every single thing that we spent on. So if we spent 50 cents on a Coke, it had to go into our journal. And you know, that instilled this idea of tracking money early on in my life.
That is perhaps the most valuable piece of advice you can be given. Because, you know, look, one of my business partners, Bram Giugelli, he keeps on telling everybody, you know, saving is all about doing a little often and early. Which is great if you're 20, but if you're 40 already, or you've you know, early isn't an option any longer. So what do you do? And the biggest changes you can make there revolve around basically making sure you don't fritter money away. And we all do it. I mean, we all just waste money left, right, and center. And the sort of financial diary concept is the best way to look back over the course of, let's say, a month and go, God, yeah, did I really need to spend $40 at Starbucks? Not such a smart thing.
So you're not what you earn, but what you keep, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
And does Hugo the app prioritize saving over everything else?
Well, not over everything else, but it's obviously, we, we are part of the wealth care journey. We talk about people's wealth care journey, and we hope to sort of impart financial wellness as a result of that. And a big part of that is making sure that people are, you know, they're tracking their spending. It's being placed in front of them. Oh, wait, hold on a second. Yes, last month I spent money on three different types of storage solution for data, be it Dropbox, G Drive, or whatever. Did I really need to do that? And the answer is most often not. So, yeah, it helps you with that. It helps you with budgeting. It helps you with, obviously, the systematic side of savings. But it's aimed at building up that whole process of you know, the short term, the medium term, and the long term, so that you can really try and alter your shall we say, immediate satisfactions to create longer-term satisfactions.
Because it's very easy to get sucked into the new subscriptions that come up all the time. Click here to subscribe and, you know, be a Patreon. And before you know it, you've got multiple subscriptions that you've lost track of. Bleeding every month, so to speak. But, you know, David, when it comes to savings, so many savings accounts pay you so little in regards to how much you keep with them.
Well, I'm afraid there's not an awful lot we can do to help that. The central bankers around the world have decided that we should all never have an interest rate, which is obviously very painful for us all. But there are other solutions. There are other savings products that help you protect wealth for the long term. Obviously, gold tends to revalue itself in relation to the growth in the money supply. So that does tend to increase in value over time. So that's one of the reasons why we've got it on our platform. But there are other ways of compounding earnings, and you know, the stock market, the bond market, the property market. I mean, these are all things that we're about to put on our platform, actually, via what we call the permanent portfolio, a portfolio of safe, long-term, savable assets that will ultimately help you compound over time.
Ah, so gold is the first step, and then after that, you're going to expand the portfolio to these different asset classes. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's a... it's very much a work in progress. We are, you know, we have a very active dialogue with our customers. We call them Hugo Heroes, and these guys sort of write in and they tell us what they're looking for, and we modify the app, and we're in the works of trying to make a major advance in the app at the moment to allow mutual funds and that type of thing on the platform.
Well, I hear you have some exciting news with regards to official approval here in Singapore. Is that a major milestone for the app, Hugo?
Oh, it's huge, actually, for us. So last week, the Monetary Authority of Singapore, MAS, gave us the approval in principle for our major payments institution license. And that's, I mean, you know, we're getting into legal, technical sort of terms here, for which for most people won't mean an awful lot. But in Singapore's case, what these major payments institutions allow for is the beginnings of open banking, which is a trend that's sort of sweeping across Europe and the United States at the moment, as coming out to Asia, with Singapore, frankly, leading the way. So it's very exciting for us and, you know, customers of companies like ours.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations. Well, coming back to the app, I like this idea of taking technology and trying to embed old world behaviors almost of saving and managing your money and building wealth. I wonder if you can elaborate a little on some of the features that do just that, you know, build on sort of an old school almost approach to money.
Okay. The one that we sort of most like in our app is our money pot. And the money pot acts kind of like a piggy bank, right, or a pocketbook, or something that relates to tracking money for a specific task. So let's say you want to go on holiday, or you want to send your son to university, or something like that. And there's a specific financial target that you have to pay for. Well, the money pot you can set up. You put a photo that attaches to the money pot itself that reminds you, okay, this is what I'm saving for, and then you have your target and you save regularly into that little money pot, safe in the knowledge that it's safe. It's a separate underlying bank account for that activity, and it promotes that saving behavior by giving you always a focal point for that, and that's much easier to do than just saving generally.
It's much more exciting to save towards a goal. But is it built to be social? Can a husband and wife both save up for their wedding, for example, as a goal?
Well, you've not yet is is the answer. But, within about 2 or 3 months, the answer will be yes. So we are, I mean, I shouldn't be announcing these sorts of things like this, but you sort of pit me to the post. But one of the things that we've really sort of stumbled on is that people are very, very keen to share their financial experience and share their burden, right? I mean, it's a very lonely thing to try and save for goals by oneself. And there are goals that are inherently shared amongst family members, for example. So when you're trying to send your son off to university, for example, it's not just you as the father who's or mother who's sort of kind of invested in that concept. It's the mother, the father, the grandparents, sometimes aunts and uncles, and they all want to get involved in their small way. And so we're creating these shared money pots that are, it's actually quite difficult to do legally. So that's one of the reasons why we haven't done it yet. But we're creating these shared money pots that allow people to save for these fabulous sort of long-term kind of life-affirming events, like sending your kid off to university, maybe the first time in a family's, you know, sort of history that someone's gone to university. It's a wonderful thing to do. And so this is the sort of thing that we're building into the app.
Absolutely fabulous. Something to look out for, sort of like Kickstarter for the family almost. But you do have community boards where people can pick up all sorts of ideas on making the money work for them, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we keep saying to people is that, you know, saving can be a lonely thing, and it can be a lonely and frightening thing. And if you find a solution to a problem, typically someone else has got that problem. So for goodness sake, share it. And, you know, by sharing all of our solutions to problems, candidly, will make the community a better place. And so, yeah, we sort of actively encourage people to sort of say, hey, you know, I saved a fortune over the last 6 months by, again, I don't want to single out Starbucks, by not going to Starbucks, you know, I saved however much. And, you know, that stuff is a godsend, and people like to read it.
That sounds good. Instead of just surfing Reddit, why not check out the community boards on Hugo as well? Now, you know, is there a way to keep at it? And does your app use technology at all to make sustainable saving a reality?
We do, you know, but we have to be quite careful with this, because our typical approach to nudging behavior is literally to nudge people. We send them a message. We sort of, you know, basically highlight certain aspects of their behaviors. Mm. But we have to do that in a way that's not intrusive. We have to do it in a way that, you know, where people feel like they can still trust us with their information, because it's, you know, it's sensitive, this stuff. And, you know, one of the things that we are, you know, very sort of definite that we want to highlight to people is that we're not one of these globo tech companies that harvests data and uses it in sort of fairly dark and nefarious ways. You know, when we are using people's data, it's to help people, genuinely suggest, you know, good uses for their money, or genuinely highlight things where they can improve on their behaviors.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned nudging, because, you know, we like being nudged but not nagged. And a lot of the time, the frequency of those notifications can tip into that area. So, yeah, it's a tough line to walk. Now, we hear so much, David, I'm constantly surrounded by people making small talk about whether or when physical currency is going to make way for some sort of digitized, whether central bank issued currency or, you know, some form of cryptocurrency. So why gold as something that, you know, Hugo has decided to allow people to invest in? And people maybe are thinking, what am I actually investing in? Am I buying gold, physical gold? Am I buying the picks and the shovels? Am I buying a gold ETF? So why gold, and what are people actually buying through Hugo?
Well, with us, they're buying physical gold that's allocated to them. So it's their gold. It's not a counterparty in any way. So an ETF, you buy shares in an ETF. So you don't own any gold. You own shares in an ETF. You buy a derivative, you know, a gold futures contract, then you don't own any gold. What you own is an obligation or a right to buy at a futures date. So there's a counterparty risk there. In our case, you own physical gold that's allocated to you in a segregated form. And that's, you know, a much safer solution, in our opinion, to the alternative. But, I mean, often the answer, the question to this is not really about the form of how you hold gold, but rather, why gold at all?
And will it hold its value in this, you know, seemingly evolving financial system?
Well, I mean, gold is a little bit like property in that respect, in the sense that God isn't making any more of it. Right? The amount that we've got is the amount that we've got. Yeah, we dig a bit more out of the ground each year, but not very much. And so, you know, there's a very, very finite supply. And that's why one always has to compare gold as a monetary asset with money that's out there. And, you know, this becomes a very sort of, I don't know, technical and quite trite subject about the quantity theories of money and those sorts of things, which I try and avoid doing. But what I say to people is often, everyone's played Monopoly, right? So you've played Monopoly, we've all played Monopoly. Mm-hmm. And property prices go up in Monopoly. And you sort of think, oh, well, hold on a second. The utility of that property isn't changing, so why is it going up? Well, it's going up because every time you pass go, $200 enters the game, and that creates inflation. Right now, everybody can understand that because they've all played Monopoly. Now, what happens with the monetary system is that central bankers print money left, right, and center, and, you know, candidly, the money supply doubled last year, more or less globally, because of, you know, stimulus and all that sort of stuff. Now, as a result, well, there's an inflationary effect there. Now, gold tends to be impacted by that inflationary effect as well, and it therefore protects you in a way that simply holding a dollar bill doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the, I mean, that's the sort of technical argument for holding gold. I mean, as, you know, we then sort of consider, well, what about all the technological advances that are being made? Gold is a very old world solution.
Right.
You know, why not a cryptocurrency? Why not a central bank digital currency? Well, cryptocurrencies and central bank digital currencies, I mean, they have the same problem, and that is that you can basically print as many of them as you like. And so one of the things that we think is exciting is the combination of gold, which you can't print, and therefore as a finance supplier will hold its value, with technology, which creates all of the sort of simplicity of doing things, you know, technologically in a way that, you know, you couldn't historically do with gold. I mean, you had to go down to a bullion dealer and buy some physical gold previously. Now you don't have to do that, and the technology has enabled that.
And how easy is it to sell my gold? I mean, a lot of listeners have written saying, gosh, I tried to sell my crypto, and then there were all these technical glitches on my exchange, and I couldn't make a sale as easily as I thought I could. How easy is it to buy and sell gold on Hugo?
It's funny that the cryptocurrency doesn't quite live up to its promises. Now, on gold, what I'll say for gold is still, I think, the second or third largest and most liquid market in the world. So you can sell your gold at any time the markets are open, which is basically, call it about 150 hours out of 168 hours a week. There's open the gold is open somewhere. I mean, over the weekends the spreads tend to widen a little bit, but basically you can sell gold at any time. And gold, you know, it has a true market price that is, you know, that is traded everywhere. I mean, you know, if you look at the size of markets, you go to the U.S. stock markets, number one, all of them combined, and then the next on the list is gold in terms of the liquidity, and then the one behind that is the U.S. Treasury markets. So, I mean, it's incredibly liquid. So the idea of you being stopped out of a market is almost inconceivable for gold, unless something very, very bad has gone on in the world, like a war or something like that, in which case the one thing you want to keep and not sell is your gold.
All right, we've been talking to Hugo's CEO, David Ferguson. He is also co-founder of the app Hugo. It's a digital account safeguarded with DBS Bank. So we talked about your gold vaults. We talked about your money pots. And whenever we talk about money, savings one side of the equation, but so is spending. So you do have a platinum Visa debit card, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Is there sort of a minimum that I have to put in order to use the card?
Yeah, the minimum is 1 cent.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Wonderful. It just sounds so fancy when you hear platinum.
we'll take that on board. You know, honestly, we take on board people's comments sort of very closely. So last time I was on here, you mentioned the honey pot rather than the money pot. We are looking to use honey and money in some way in part of our marketing campaigns because we think it's nice. It's fun. You know, everyone likes it.
Oh, that's fabulous. Glad to hear that, David. And so wonderful to check in with you again. Thank you for being on air with us.
Thank you very much, Michelle. I really appreciate it.
He's David Ferguson, CEO and co-founder of Hugo.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.